You know that feeling, right?
Yeah.
Just digital overwhelm.
Oh yeah.
Your browser's got like a million tabs open, the feed just keeps scrolling.
Nonstop information.
Exactly. And you just want to cut through all that noise, get to the real stuff, the insights, those aha moments, but without, you know, spending hours digging for them.
Definitely, it's exhausting.
Well, if that sounds familiar, you've kind of found your shortcut. Welcome to the deep dive. We unpack compelling knowledge and, well, deliver it straight to you.
That's the idea. We take these complex topics, a bunch of curated sources, and really distill them down into takeaways that actually mean something. We're sort of your guides through the material you bring us.
And today, wow, we're diving into something fascinating. Human personality. Our mission here is to explore what makes us tick, but through a really unique lens. It's called the Soulbound Personality Test. And we're going deep on one specific type today, a really dynamic one, the restless tinkerer.
Right. So our sources are the test itself and this detailed profile of the tinkerer type that comes from the Soulbound system. We're basically extracting the core wisdom here. What drives them? What insights can we pull out?
And these insights, they're not just abstract ideas, right? They have implications for how you understand yourself, how you interact with others.
Absolutely. What's great about systems like Soulbound, when they're done well, is they go beyond just putting you in a box. It's about sparking those personal aha moments, offering practical stuff you can actually use.
Totally. And for anyone listening who's thinking, okay, I'm curious now, you can actually take the Soulbound test yourself. It's quick, like 12 questions, and it's completely free.
Yeah, that's a great starting point.
You just go to soulbound.love. That's SOULBOUND.LOVE. It's a fantastic first step for some real self-discovery.
And really, it's just the start. That free test gives you your primary type, which is huge in itself. But then the system offers options for a much deeper analysis.
Oh, okay. So there's more after the initial result.
Yeah, much more. If you want it, you can buy these deeper dives. They offer things like tailored career advice, like what jobs really align with your core strengths.
That sounds incredibly useful.
It is.
Yeah.
And stuff like understanding your best personality matches for relationships, love and partnership, even parenting advice, specifically crafted for your type.
Wow. Parenting advice based on your personality type. That's specific.
And you can see which famous people might share your soul pattern, which is kind of fun. But maybe most importantly, it offers actionable solutions to common challenges that each personality type tends to face.
Okay, so it's not just identifying the challenges, but offering ways to work through them.
Exactly. A really comprehensive tool if you want to keep exploring and growing beyond that first free result.
All right, that sounds fascinating. Let's dive in then. Before we get into the nitty-gritty of the restless tinkerer, maybe we should lay the groundwork. Understand the Soulbound test itself. It sounds like it aims to reveal your inner path.
That's a really good way to phrase it. Soulbound positions itself as more than just, a standard personality quiz. It's designed to uncover what they call your inner soul pattern.
Inner soul pattern.
Yeah. So the idea isn't just about charting your surface level habits or what you prefer, but really aiming to tap into something fundamental, an inherent aspect of who you are at your core.
Something unique to you.
Exactly. Like a consistent energetic signature that underlies everything else.
Interesting. And the test itself, you mentioned it's short, just 12 questions?
Just 12, which is, pretty refreshing compared to some tests out there that take ages.
Definitely. And the guidance for taking it is interesting too. It says, take your time, feel into each answer. That suggests it's not about speed, right? It's more introspective.
Absolutely. It's definitely encouraging introspection. It wants you to connect with a more intuitive response, not just an intellectual one, to really let your true self, your essence, kind of surface through the answers.
And the language they use around the process, the soul reading.
Yeah, it's quite evocative, isn't it? Almost a bit mystical. As you answer, it talks about aligning with your frequency or how whispers of your essence are forming.
Huh. So it builds a sense of anticipation, like something personal is being revealed.
Right. It frames it less like a clinical assessment and more like a journey into your own energetic blueprint. It's trying to create a different kind of experience than just ticking boxes.
So you go through these 12 introspective questions, feeling into the answers, and then the result is ready.
Yep, revealing your unique soul pattern. And yeah, for someone seeking that deeper self-understanding, that moment is meant to feel pretty significant.
But you mentioned there's more to it. It doesn't just stop at that one core type.
No, and that's what I find really fascinating. The sources say beneath your core type lies a deeper signature.
A deeper signature.
Yeah.
What does that mean exactly?
Well, they give this example, like, do you lead from quiet control or gentle anchoring presence. It suggests layers of nuance.
Ah, okay. So it's not just what your type is, but how it expresses itself.
Precisely. It's like the core type is the archetype, maybe. And the deeper signature is your unique personal flavor of that archetype, how you actually manifest it in the world.
I like that. It feels more realistic. You know, people aren't just one thing.
Exactly. We're complex.
And this whole system, it's not just the restless tinkerer we're talking about today, right?
Yeah.
There are other types.
Oh, yeah. It's part of a larger framework. There are 16 soulbound types in total.
16. Okay.
So, yeah. Well, we're zeroing in on the tinkerer today. It's just one thread in a much bigger tapestry. It kind of invites you to explore the whole spectrum if you're curious. Find where you fit in the bigger picture.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. So with that foundation laid, let's really dive into our main subject today, the restless tinkerer. Even the name, it just sounds energetic, doesn't it?
It really does.
Yeah.
And the profile confirms that immediately. It's all about a mind that's just constantly in motion.
How so?
Well, the first thing that jumps out is their mental speed.
Mm.
The source says, your mind moves fast. Curious, intuitive, always scanning.
Always scanning. Like radar.
Kind of, yeah. It's not just occasional bursts of thought. It's their fundamental way of operating. Constantly processing, observing, analyzing the environment with this heightened awareness.
And that leads them to see the world differently. The profile says they don't just accept how things are, you instinctively see how they could be.
Exactly. It's not about being negative or critical just for the sake of it. It's more like they have this built-in drive to see potential everywhere, to glimpse a better, more efficient possibility in almost any situation.
So when they look at a system, they're not just seeing the system itself.
No. For them, systems feel like puzzles waiting to be reworked. That phrase really captures it.
Okay.
Think about looking at a messy spreadsheet or some convoluted company process. Most people might just groan and deal with it.
Right.
A tinker. Their brain instantly starts deconstructing it. It's like a puzzle, a challenge. They automatically go into optimization mode, mentally highlighting the bottlenecks, seeing smoother paths, often before they even consciously decide to tackle it.
And that line, inefficiencies aren't annoyances, they're invitations. That really reframes it, doesn't it?
It completely does. What frustrates most people becomes an exciting call to action for the tinkerer.
Can you give an example? Like, how would that play out day to day?
Sure. Imagine dealing with one of those automated phone menus for customer service. Most of us just grit our teeth.
Mm-hmm. Pressing zero repeatedly.
Right. A tinker might be doing that, but simultaneously, they're mentally redesigning the entire IVR system in their head, figuring out how illogical the branching is, identifying the redundant steps.
Okay, I can picture that.
Or in a meeting at work. If the team is struggling with some slow, clunky approval process, the tinkerer isn't just hearing a problem. They're seeing a fascinating puzzle. They'll be mapping it out, pinpointing bottlenecks, probably brainstorming three better ways to do it while everyone else is still talking about the issue.
It's like a relentless drive towards improvement.
Exactly. Positive, relentless improvement.
So it makes total sense they'd thrive in dynamic environments then. The profile says they thrive in iteration and find comfort in motion.
Yes. That continuous improvement process, that's their natural habitat. That's where they feel alive.
And the flip side is that aversion to stagnation, routine dulls you, it says.
Very strongly. And they don't just sit around feeling dull. Their response is proactive.
Yeah.
When things stagnate, you pivot before anyone else has noticed.
Wow. So how does that constant need for change and that rapid perception actually, you know, look in their daily lives or at work? It sounds like quite a force.
It really is a force.
Mm.
In daily life, you might see a tinkerer constantly tweaking their workspace for better flow or finding new, faster routes for errands. They might pick up hobbies intensely, like learning guitar, mastering coding, but then lose interest once it becomes about repetitive practice. You know, the initial challenge fades. They might automate household chores just because they can see a better way.
Right. Not because they have to, but because the inefficiency bothers them.
Exactly. Professionally, this translates really well to certain roles. Think startups, where everything's changing constantly. They'd be invaluable there.
Okay, agility is key.
Totally. Or R&D, product development, troubleshooting complex problems. Anywhere their instinct to question, optimize, and build is needed. They're often the ones pushing for new strategies, fixing broken processes.
Hey, what about roles that are more stable or bureaucratic?
That's where they can really struggle. Roles with rigid rules, unchanging protocols, slow decision making. that can feel like torture to them. Their mind is already miles ahead, and being held back or forced down a suboptimal path is genuinely painful. They need problems to solve.
Okay, that paints a clear picture, but it also sounds intense, like a lot of internal pressure.
It definitely can be.
As we look at their internal world, the sources say this speed comes at a cost. It's not all just innovation and efficiency, is it? What's the downside?
No, there's definitely a cost. The profile hints at these coping mechanisms. It says you joke to deflect, you shift gears to avoid discomfort.
Deflect, avoid discomfort. How does that work?
Well, it suggests their quick thinking and humor can sometimes be a way to sidestep deeper emotional stuff or difficult conversations.
Ah, like a defense mechanism.
Exactly. A quick joke, a sudden change of subject. It's a shield. It keeps them from having to sit with something uncomfortable or vulnerable. Their mind is so fast at finding the next problem to solve, it can inadvertently pull focus from maybe internal pain or awkwardness.
And that idea that your mind never fully powers down, that sounds exhausting.
It must be. Imagine that constant internal processing, always running.
Driven by that quiet pressure to always improve, always deliver, always be just one step ahead. And it's not necessarily external pressure, right? It's coming from inside.
Largely, yes. It's this potent internal drive to optimize, to produce, to never really be done, which can be incredibly taxing over time.
And that internal pressure, it means their sense of self-worth can get tangled up with their output, right?
Inextricably linked, often. And what's really fascinating, kind of poignant, is that despite this drive for innovation, the profile says the tinkerer craves more than innovation.
More. What do they crave?
Liberation. That's the word used. Liberation from expectations, from the weight of usefulness, from the idea that worth must be earned through output.
Wow, that's deep.
It is. This is their core internal struggle. They're so good at producing, fixing, creating, that their very identity, their sense of self, can become tragically tied to how productive they are.
So that question the source poses, what you're really asking is, if I stop producing, am I still enough?
That just hits hard, doesn't it?
It's incredibly poignant, almost existential. It goes right to the heart of identity and value.
And the implications of grappling with that question, they must be significant. Does it lead to things like, I don't know, burnout?
Yeah.
Or constantly judging themselves?
You absolutely hit it. The implications are huge. That constant self-evaluation, the pressure to prove worth through output, it manifests in painful ways. Burnout is a massive risk.
Because they never switch off. Exactly. Even when they're physically still, their mind is racing, optimizing. Restlessness, mental exhaustion.
Yeah.
If they're not actively fixing something, they can feel anxious. It's like an existential treadmill.
A treadmill, yeah.
Their value feels dependent on the last thing they produced or the next thing they're planning. So true rest, feeling content, just feeling like they're enough right now, that's incredibly hard to reach.
Can you give a scenario?
Okay, imagine a tinkerer finishes a huge successful project.
Yeah.
Took massive effort. Logically, time to celebrate, right?
Rest? You'd think so.
But for the tinkerer, that quiet moment might immediately trigger that dreaded question. Okay, what now? What's next? Am I still valuable if I'm not generating the next big idea? So it pushes them. Overworking, taking on too much, feeling guilty during downtime because that little voice says you should be doing something useful. It's a cycle. Push, exhaust, prove value, repeat, leading to burnout. Emotional, mental, physical.
That internal struggle really explains so much about their outward behavior. Okay, let's shift to those more observable patterns, the key traits. They optimize instinctively, even when nothing seems broken. What does that actually mean in practice?
It means their default setting is improve.
Yeah.
They see potential tweaks and efficiencies everywhere, even in things that seem perfectly fine to others.
So nothing is ever truly finished for them.
Pretty much, which is amazing for innovation, right? Cool. They'll find improvements no one else dreamed of. But it can also be disruptive. They might want to change things just because they can make them theoretically better, even if the current way works okay. It can create a sense of constant flux around them.
And that connects to the next point. They lose interest the moment things feel predictable. That's a strong statement. How does that play out in life? Hobbies, work, relationships?
Oh, it's a huge factor. They're often brilliant starters, getting projects going, solving those initial complex puzzles. Fantastic. But the follow-through, the maintenance phase when things get routine, that's where they struggle.
So lots of half-finished hobbies.
Could be, yeah. They master the steep learning curve of an instrument or a craft. Then the repetitive practice feels dull. So they're off to the next shiny challenge.
And in careers.
They excel in those dynamic environments. We talked about startups, R&D, consulting, crisis management, anywhere change is constant and new problems pop up daily. But stable, bureaucratic jobs with rigid protocols, that predictability can be suffocating, lead to real disengagement.
What about relationships? Does that predictability aversion affect things there?
It can. They often thrive with partners who are also dynamic, curious, open to growth and new experiences. If a relationship settles into a very predictable routine without new shared interests or intellectual sparks, they might feel restless. It doesn't mean they don't value stability, but they need ongoing stimulation and growth within it. Too much static can be hard for them.
Okay. Then there's the tendency to mask vulnerability with wit or sharpness, using that quick mind as a shield again.
Seems like it. It's probably a very effective, maybe subconscious way to stay in control and avoid feeling exposed. Their mind is so fast, they can instantly fire off a witty comment, a sharp observation, change the subject. It diffuses uncomfortable moments, redirects attention away from their own feelings. It keeps them feeling ahead of the situation rather than vulnerable or maybe even inefficient at handling emotions.
Which ties back to that fear about worth being tied to competence or output.
Exactly. It's an intellectual defense that keeps people at a bit of a distance from their inner world.
And this next point feels important. They stay in motion to stay engaged, not to run. Can you unpack that difference? It's not just avoidance.
That's a crucial distinction the source makes. It's not necessarily about running away from problems in the typical sense. It's more about running towards mental engagement.
Okay.
For the tinkerer, that motion, physical, intellectual, creative, it's how they feel stimulated, sharp, alive. It prevents that dullness of stagnation they hate. It's how they express their energy and curiosity.
Yeah.
Staying still feels counterintuitive to their nature.
So if you put all these tendencies together, the optimization drive, hating predictability, masking vulnerability, needing motion, how does that actually impact working with them, like on a team?
Okay, good question. On a team, a tinkerer can be an absolute powerhouse for innovation, identifying problems, proposing creative solutions, adapting quickly, unbeatable. They're the one in the meeting saying, wait, hang on, what if we did it this way instead, sketch something out?
Already got a solution brewing.
Often, yeah. Maybe even a rough prototype idea before the problem is fully defined.
Always a but.
Always.
Yeah.
Their impatience can definitely cause friction. If they feel things are moving too slowly or getting bogged down in consensus building or what they perceive as unnecessary emotional detail, they might cut people off, seem dismissive.
Even if they don't mean to.
Right. They might jump from idea to idea, assuming everyone's following, which can leave others feeling lost. And that optimization drive, it can feel like nothing is ever done because they always see another improvement, even after launch.
Analysis paralysis for the rest of the team.
Could be. Or just a feeling of constant revision. And then there's the project abandonment issue. If they lose interest once the main challenge is gone, others might consistently have to handle the long-term operational stuff.
Which could lead to resentment if it's not managed well.
Absolutely. Clear roles, clear handoffs, understanding their strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah.
That's all critical when collaborating with a tinkerer.
Okay, so strengths are clear, but the challenges are real too. Let's dig into those obstacles more formally. First up, impatience with slower processes or emotional nuance. That sounds like a big one.
It is, and it flows directly from that fast mental speed, waiting for others, engaging in long, deliberate steps. It can feel physically frustrating for them.
And the emotional nuance part.
Yeah, that's often a real sticking point. They might struggle with the slower, messier, less logical pace of emotional processing, both their own and others. They often prefer to find a quick fix for a feeling or a relationship issue rather than just sitting with it, exploring it, or patiently validating it.
So they might seem abrupt and sensitive.
Potentially, yeah. Even if they don't intend to. They're thinking, okay, problem identified, what's the solution? While someone else might just need empathy or space to feel heard. It's a clash of processing styles.
And then there's the difficulty resting, that guilt or restlessness when not producing. We touched on this, but it sounds truly exhausting.
It's profoundly exhausting because if your worth feels tied to your output, then stillness feels unproductive, pointless, maybe even threatening to your sense of self.
The moment they stop, that question comes back, am I still enough?
Exactly. It can surface with real force, creating this powerful urge to get busy again, to do something useful. True relaxation, just switching off, becomes incredibly difficult.
So even on vacation, they might be.
Checking emails constantly, starting a complex new project the minute they sit down, feeling anxious with unscheduled time? Absolutely. It's a recipe for chronic fatigue and burnout because the internal engine just doesn't idle easily.
And that very practical challenge, that tendency to abandon projects once the challenge fades, that must frustrate people.
It definitely can. It's a direct result of needing that novelty, that puzzle-solving buzz. Mm-hmm. Once the hard part is cracked, the system is optimized. Their interest can just plummet. Routine maintenance, incremental improvements, long-term execution, those don't provide the same mental thrill.
Leading to?
Potentially a trail of brilliantly started but unfinished things. Mm-hmm. Or a reputation for being great at launch, but not seeing things through the long haul unless the challenge somehow persists. For teams, others end up carrying the long-term load, which needs careful management.
Okay, and the last one. Their method of avoidance of discomfort by chasing constant improvement. That sounds like a loop.
It's a classic self-perpetuating cycle, feeling uncomfortable internally. Instead of facing it, divert that energy outwards. Find something external to fix, optimize, improve.
And that feels good, right? Gives a sense of control.
Exactly. It provides temporary relief, a sense of purpose, distraction, so the behavior gets reinforced. But it means the underlying discomfort, the difficult emotion, the challenging internal state, it never really gets addressed.
Delaying actual growth in those areas.
Right. It's a clever coping mechanism, often very successful in the short term, but ultimately limits deeper self-understanding and emotional resilience.
So if someone listening recognizes themselves in this or recognizes someone they work with, how do they deal with these challenges? What practical steps can they take? This sounds like where that deeper soul-bound analysis might offer real help.
Absolutely. That deeper analysis is designed to provide tailored solutions. But generally, the first step is always self-awareness. Just recognizing, okay, this is a pattern for me.
Right. Acknowledging it.
Then you can start working on strategies for the impatience, conscious practice, active listening, maybe setting an intention before a meeting. I will let others finish before I jump in. Reflective listening, paraphrasing back what you heard instead of instantly solutionizing.
Especially with emotional stuff.
Definitely. Shifting from fix-it mode to just be present mode. Allowing space for feelings without needing to immediately solve them. The deeper soul-bound results often give specific communication tips for this.
Okay. And for the difficulty resting, the guilt.
Schedule it. Deliberately schedule short chunks of non-productive time. Start small, 10, 15 minutes. The only goal, just be. No phone, no agenda, no problem solving.
What would that look like?
Sit quietly. Stare out the window. Listen to music without analyzing it. Observe your breath. It's not about perfect meditation, just creating tiny islands of stillness. Mindfulness exercises, even 5-minute guided ones, can help anchor them in the present, away from future optimizing.
And activities just for fun.
Yes. Engage in things purely for pleasure, zero goal of improvement. Hmm. Hiking just to hike, drawing just to draw. Retrain the brain that value exists outside productivity. And crucially, challenge that internal voice. Hmm. I should be doing something useful. Replace it with it's okay to rest, or my worth isn't earned. Cognitive reframing takes practice, but it works.
What about abandoning projects?
Conscious commitment helps. Acknowledge the tendency, then decide. I will see this specific project through. Maybe find mini challenges within the later stages to stay engaged. Or even better, smart collaboration. Partner with people who love follow through. Let the tinkerer initiate, then have a clear handoff. Play to strengths.
Makes sense. And finally, that avoidance of discomfort by chasing improvement.
That requires a deliberate pause. When that urge hits, must fix something external. Especially feeling internally stressed. Consciously ask, what am I actually feeling right now? What am I trying to avoid?
Turn inwards instead of outwards.
Exactly. Try to sit with the feeling, name it, allow it, without judgment or needing to instantly solve it away. This is a huge growth area, and again, a deeper soul-bound analysis can offer specific exercises for emotional processing and building that resilience.
That's incredibly helpful. Really practical stuff. Now let's zoom right into the core of it, how the restless tinker actually thinks. The source is you build faster than most can think. That just nails it, doesn't it? That action bias.
It really does. It captures that their thinking isn't just abstract. It's inherently about making, doing, materializing.
So ideas don't just stay as ideas for long.
Rarely. As the idea forms, they're already mentally constructing the solution, designing the prototype, visualizing the optimized system. Thinking is building for them, or at least the immediate prelude to it. The doing starts almost simultaneously.
Which makes them super efficient.
Incredibly. They can turn a concept into something tangible, even if it's just a detailed mental blueprint, astonishingly quickly. It's like their internal design software is just always running in the background.
And the source breaks down their unique lens on life using four words: outward, reason, fluid, discovery.
These sound like their operating principles. Can we unpack those?
Yeah, let's break them down.
This means their main focus, their energy, goes towards the external world. They're concerned with what they can see, touch, change in their environment.
Solving external problems. Exactly. Optimizing systems out there, making a tangible impact. Less focus on deep internal introspection or abstract philosophy, unless it has a practical application. They want to see the results. Then, reason. This means logic, analysis, objective facts are their primary drivers. They look for rational explanations, systematic approaches, data.
Efficiency and objective truth.
Right. They value a clear, logical path. Doesn't mean they don't have feelings, but their main processing and decision-making mode is logical.
Okay, so outward-focused, logic-driven. What about fluid and discovery?
Fluid highlights their adaptability, their comfort with change, with motion. They aren't rigid. They can flow around problems, pivot strategies easily when new info comes in.
Ties into that comfort with iteration we talked about.
Perfectly. They're agile thinkers. They can reconfigure their mental models quickly.
Yeah.
And discovery. This is about that relentless curiosity, that drive for new insights, new knowledge, better ways.
Always seeking.
Always. It's an active quest for novelty, for understanding, for uncovering what's hidden or what could be next. Not just passive learning, but really engaged exploration.
That's a really clear framework. Outward, reason, fluid, discovery. If you compare that to other possible approaches, like someone who's maybe more inward or driven by emotion or prefers things static or values tradition, how does that contrast really make the tinkerer stand out?
Oh, that comparison really flows their uniqueness into sharp relief. Okay, let's take them one by one. Outward tinkerer versus inward. The tinkerer is energized by engaging the external world. An inward type might be deeply exploring their own feelings, subjective experiences, maybe spiritual growth. Tinkerer optimizes the system. Inward type optimizes inner peace.
Okay, different focus entirely.
Reason, tinkerer versus emotion. The tinkerer prioritizes logic, data. An emotion-driven type prioritizes feelings, empathy, harmony, connection. Tinkerer asks, what's most efficient? Emotion type asks, what feels right? What maintains connection?
Logic versus feeling is the primary driver.
Fluid, tinkerer versus static. Tinkerer embraces change, adaptability. A static type prefers stability, routine, predictability. Change feels disruptive to them, whereas the tinkerer thrives on it. Consistency versus evolution.
Got it. And the last one.
Discovery, tinkerer versus tradition. Tinkerer seeks novelty, innovation, what's next? A tradition-focused type values established norms, history, proven methods. They find comfort in what works, while the tinkerer is always asking, what else could work?
Past versus future orientation, in a way.
Yeah, or proven versus possible. This specific combo, outward reason, fluid, discovery, it really defines their unique cognitive fingerprint. It makes them this powerful force for change and innovation. Architects of a dynamic future, you could say.
Architects of a dynamic future. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, now let's get to what feels like the most, maybe transformative part of the profile. The guidance it offers to the restless tinker. And it starts with something huge. You don't have to be useful to be worthy.
Wow.
That cuts right to the core of their struggle, doesn't it?
It's an absolutely massive reframe for them.
Yeah.
Huge. For someone whose identity, whose self-worth is so deeply tangled up with their output, their usefulness, their ability to fix things, this message directly challenges that entire foundation.
It's saying your value isn't conditional.
Exactly. Your inherent value as a person isn't based on your last achievement or how useful you are right now. It's a radical invitation to just be worthy, inherently.
And it builds on that. You don't have to earn your spot by constantly fixing, tweaking, or optimizing. That sounds like permission to just stop striving so hard.
It's permission to step off that internal hamster wheel, that relentless drive to produce, optimize, prove themselves through action. This says, you belong here just as you are. Your existence is enough. For a type driven to constantly earn their place, that idea of just having a place is incredibly liberating. A path to inner peace, maybe.
Which leads right into the advice. Let yourself be still without proving anything. Now, we know how hard resting is for them. So how crucial is this piece of guidance, and how tough is it really to put into practice?
It's probably the hardest and the most vital piece of advice for their long-term well-being. For a mind that's always on, always feeling that pressure, stillness can feel wrong, counterintuitive, painful even.
Like an engine seizing up.
Exactly. Yeah. It might bring up anxiety, guilt, that feeling of aimlessness because their identity is so tied to doing. Being can feel like a void.
But it's necessary.
Absolutely necessary. Because it's in that stillness, however uncomfortable at first, that they can start to truly untangle their worth from their output. It allows the mind to genuinely rest, yes. But more importantly, it fosters genuine self-acceptance that isn't dependent on achievements. It creates space to just be. It's the biggest growth edge. And choosing stillness, even briefly, is incredibly courageous for a tinkerer.
And connected to that, there's let others see who you are when the engine idles. Encouraging authenticity. Vulnerability.
Yes, exactly. Since they often use wit, sharpness, or just being on and problem solving as a shield, allowing themselves to be seen when they're quiet, maybe unsure, not actively producing, that takes immense courage.
Trusting they'll still be valued.
Precisely. Trusting that people connect with them, not just their output or their cleverness. It's an invitation for deeper, more genuine human connection beyond the impressive surface.
And then the final thought, which is just so profound. You are not just what you create. You are the one who imagined it in the first place. That completely reframes their identity, doesn't it?
It's possibly the most powerful shift in perspective for them. It moves the focus from the product, the thing they fixed or built, to the source of the product.
To their inner world.
Right. To their inherent creativity, their unique way of seeing, their imagination, their ingenious mind. Not just the tangible results. It says their value lies in that potential, that spark, that visionary capability itself, regardless of constant output. It's permission to be the visionary and value that inner wellspring above all.
That is incredibly powerful. So, okay, for a tinkerer listening, nodding along, how do they actually apply this? What are those first small practical steps to integrate these ideas and really find that worth beyond production? And I guess this is where the deeper soulbound analysis could offer personalized pathways.
Yes, exactly. The deeper analysis aims to give those tailored strategies. But in general, practical application has to start small and be consistent. Okay, first step, schedule short, deliberate, do nothing time. Seriously, put it in the calendar. 5-10 minutes. No agenda, no phone, no problems. Just sit, observe. Breathe, create micro moments of stillness.
Train the stillness muscle.
Kind of, yeah. Second, practice mindfulness. Just brief exercises. Ground yourself in the now. Their minds are always optimizing the future. Mindfulness pulls them back. 5 minutes can make a difference. Third, do things purely for pleasure. No goal, no improvement metric. Draw because drawing feels good. Hike to see the trees, not to hit a step count. Retrain the brain to value non-productive experience.
Undoing that conditioning.
Exactly. Fourth, challenge the shoulds. When that voice pops up, I should be doing something useful. Consciously challenge it. Replace it. It's okay to rest. My worth is inherent. Repeat, repeat, repeat. It starts to sink in.
Cognitive reframing.
Mm-hmm. And maybe a fifth, ask for feedback from trusted people. Do you value my presence even when I'm just listening, not fixing? External validation that they are valued for who they are can be incredibly reinforcing. Small steps, consistently taken. That's the key.
That's fantastic. Really actionable advice. This whole deep dive, it really shows why understanding these personality types using a nuanced system like Soulbound actually matters, doesn't it? It's not just labeling.
Oh, far from it. Knowing your own type, like the tinkerer, it can be so liberating personally.
Yeah.
Bring self-awareness. You understand your natural tendencies, your strengths, those deep challenges we talked about.
It's like getting the user manual for yourself.
Exactly. And that awareness is the absolute starting point for real growth and for self-compassion. You stop trying to be someone you're not or feeling guilty for how you're wired. You start understanding why some things energize you and others drain you. It's huge.
And it goes beyond just you, right? Understanding these patterns in other people, that changes things too.
Immensely. Recognizing that a colleague might be a tinkerer, always optimizing, or that someone else operates from a totally different core motivation. It builds empathy instantly.
So you communicate better, collaborate better.
Absolutely. You can adjust your style, yeah. Appreciate their approach, even if it's different, navigate disagreements with more understanding. It shifts things from, why are they like that, frustration, to, okay, I see their pattern. It makes collaboration, relationships, everything potentially much smoother and more productive. It helps you leverage diversity instead of fighting it.
So the real value isn't putting people in boxes.
No. Fundamentally not. It's about gaining a framework, a shared language, to understand the incredible complexity of human behavior, why we do what we do, why others do what they do.
Making sense of it all.
Yeah, giving you tools for deeper self-understanding, better strategies for growth, and ultimately richer, more compassionate relationships. It helps you navigate the world and yourself with way more clarity.
What an exploration of the restless tinkerer. Just fascinating. We've seen that lightning fast mind, the drive to optimize everything, but also that really deep craving for liberation from the need to produce.
Mm-hmm. Their amazing strengths in pattern recognition, adaptability, but also the real challenges. Impatience, trouble resting, sometimes leaving things unfinished.
And that core guidance. You don't have to be useful to be worthy. Your identity is in the imagination, not just the final product. So powerful.
It really is a compelling profile. So for everyone listening, we really hope this sparked something for you. Did it resonate? Does it sound like you?
Or maybe it shed light on someone important in your life. A colleague, friend, partner, helping you understand their world a bit better.
If you felt any of those aha moments, or if you're just curious now about your own inner path, your own soul pattern,
we definitely recommend checking out the Soulbound Personality Test. It's quick, totally free, just those 12 questions to get you started.
Find it at soulbound.love. That's soulbound.love.
And like you said, that's just the beginning. Beyond that core type, there's the deeper signature and those more detailed analyses you can get.
Right. For the personalized career advice, the relationship compatibility insights, the parenting guidance tailored to your type.
Finding out which famous people share your pattern, getting those actionable solutions for your specific challenges. It sounds like a really valuable resource for ongoing growth.
It really is designed to be an ongoing journey into self-understanding, helping you unlock your potential.
Okay, so as we wrap up this deep dive, maybe a final thought for everyone to mull over.
Yeah, let's leave you with this. If our true worth isn't actually tied to what we constantly produce or perfect, but rather stems from that unique, inherent spark of who we are, the visionary, the dreamer, the one who imagines it all in the first place, then what might we truly liberate ourselves to create, or perhaps even more profoundly, what might we liberate ourselves simply to be?
Something to definitely ponder. Until our next deep dive.